I'm Dr. Steve Vargo, and welcome to another episode of I Own a Business, where we focus on helping practice owners grow the practice of their dreams. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Vargo, and I have with me Sharon Carter, who's a close friend of iDoc and the founder of the consulting group iCare Optometric Consulting. Sharon, it's always a pleasure. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. It's always great to be here, and I'm on a high because I just came off of a big general session. Your people are excited and really ready. My whole focus this year has been about let's take this practice to the next level. And so they have been excited about it, and man, when you get that kind of energy, if you're not at this meeting, you're missing out because y'all have got it going on.
Yeah, you're ready to go. You just... I met you as you were walking off stage, and you're like, where are we at? Where are we talking? So I should mention, too, that Sharon Carter is sitting right next to me. A lot of times we do these more virtual,
yes.
But we're recording this at the iDoc Connection, so we had the opportunity to sit down and talk in person. So we did this last year, and we thought it went so well that by popular request, we thought we'd try it again. So what I'd like to focus on is something right up your alley. How do we help ODs take their practice to the next level? So I thought maybe that we'd lead off with trying to reverse engineer that as we talk about taking your practice to the next level. How do doctors get stuck? What prevents them from taking their practice to the next level?
I feel like the biggest thing that has put the lid on their practices has been the level of leadership. And once they get in the million, 1.5 million, 2 million, it gets harder because we have to develop leaders within our practices. And that's hard sometimes because you're seeing patients, you're trying to run a business. And now how do we get good leaders? And I always tell my people, there's two ways to get good leaders. You can pay for one or you can build one. But if you build one, you're going to spend the same amount of money. It's just going to be over time. But we've got to invest in those people. But I want to back up a little bit with that because 2020 and COVID changed a lot of the way we do things. And practices that were on the trajectory up, I find, have flatlined, and they've been struggling finding their footing to get that momentum going back again. And so what in my practice is what we've had to do is we go back to the basics. And I would say for you, if you found yourself in that situation, we need to go back to the foundation and the basics and revisit every one of the processes that we had in place that got us where we were when the lid got put on the top. And make sure, are we still, because what happens is when you get more and more staff and you're growing, the focus gets off of the basics because we're just making it happen. And then we don't even know it. The doctor may not even know that we've left that process that made us successful in the beginning. So with my offices, we've went back and visited, how are we pre-appointing? How are we handling that? There's a way to handle that that gets you success, 75 to 90% of those people coming. There's ways that you can do that that only 25% are coming. So how do we do that? Because that's the number one foundational thing. If there's not a butt in the chair, we're not going to grow. So we look at our pre-appointing. How are we creating the process of once they get to the practice, have we got all their insurance pulled? Are we pulling that 3 days out? All of those basic things and processes that we did that helped us be so successful on the front end to collect our money on the back end, you know, we were in survival mode for months. Some of these offices, up, especially up north, years, we've been in survival mode. Then we open back up and it's like, oh my gosh, mad dash, how do we make this happen now? How do we make up what we've lost this time that we haven't been able to do business as usual? So going back to stepping back and looking at, okay, front desk, are we doing the foundational things in the front desk? Techs, are we doing the foundational things that got us where we need? Are we still running those same processes that made us successful to get to 1, 2, 3 million? Because if we're not doing those, even if we're trying to build leaders, it's a constant struggle because we're not the things that got us successful. We're not in that groove anymore. We're not on autopilot. So revisiting all those processes in every area of the office that we had in place before pre-COVID, are we still doing that at the same level? That's step one in our getting to that place where we can look at how are we going to take it to the next level.
A word you kept using was doing. And I think when we look at strategy versus execution, what I found is that a lot of ODs have strategy, even if it's a loose strategy. There's ideas. There's mm-hmm. things they'd like to do, but it's the doing part that often struggles. It's the execution. And that's what I found early on when there's a lack of leadership. I like to call it a leadership void. Those are the practices that reach out to me and probably reach out to you as well, saying, I've got ideas, but it's hard to get, it's just not getting done, and it's hard to get my staff on board, or they did it for a couple weeks and then they went back to the old way. So I'm interested in your thoughts on that, and then after that we'll get into tracking some numbers, some real data that's going to give us a framework for something we can work off of, because I think that's a big part of leadership, is getting beyond just strategy and actually making sure that we're executing on the ideas that we have.
Right, and getting past processes into accountability. Are the processes we have creating the results that we're looking for? I just got called last year to an office, and the doc said, I want you to look at this, and I want you to help me. And I mean, he could write manuals for you, iDoc, if he wanted to. The manual was stellar. He already had the people in place. But he said, I'm not really getting what I feel like I can. We put people in a position, and the leadership void, when you get over 1.5 million, especially 2 million, you're not going any further unless you have a good leadership team, and you need to start building that team. By the time you hit a million, you need to already have an idea of who's my leader is going to be. And because you can't do it. If you're the doctor generating the income, you can't be out front making sure everything is executed as you think. So you give them the game plan, but there's no coach running the plan. Now, you may have somebody in mind, oh, well, they're going to handle it, but they have no authority to handle it. And when you put somebody in, if you have an expectation of someone that does not have a title that says, I have the authority to tell you this is how we do it, then you're setting them up to fail. Because people look at them and go, you're just like me. Who are you to be telling me what to do? So you've got to start building those people, and at the right point, put them in that leadership role. But you don't need to go, you're the leader, and now it's like, okay, we're at ground level. We need to be thinking ahead and being visionary at least 1 to 2 years out. What am I going to need at that point? And the leadership void, that's the biggest thing that we deal with, because once we get to that 1.2 to 1.5, we start feeling the pressure. When we get to 2 million, we're feeling like we're going to crash and burn. But we have to have that supporting staff to help get us to the next level. And the execution, and this is what docs are really good at, and you just said it, they're very good at coming up with a plan, but the accountability of when we don't execute that plan as stated, how do they do that? What does that look like? And that's what this doctor said to me. And I said, well, you've got the plan. I said, what do you do when they don't do it? Well, we tell them, it's in our manual, you didn't do it. And I said, and? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, the next time we tell them, hey, this is the second time we told you, don't do that. But there's no consequences for those actions. And that's where we fall down. That's uncomfortable. But that somebody has to do that. So there has to be consequences when it's not executed at the level that we need it to be. And, you know, we think about that as that's going to be confrontation. It's going to be awful. That may be a conversation to say, hey, this is the plan. This is the vision. We're not reaching that. Help me understand why, because this is a deal breaker. This is going to be the difference whether we move to the next level or not. Help me understand what's happening here. Having that conversation. Now, that conversation may be, I have to count on you to get this done for me. Can I count on you? And if they say yes, the next thing out of my mouth is, do you need any tools for me? And then if they say no, the next time it's not executed, we have the discussion of, we've already discussed this, and now we're at a point of a disciplinary action, because we've talked about it. There's no problem getting it done that way. You don't need any tools, but here we are now, and it's still not executed correctly. So now this is going to be a verbal warning. This has to be executed in this way, and if it's not, then we'll have to sit down again, and that's going to be a verbal warning, and that's going to be the last warning, and then you're not going to be able to be on our team. Doesn't have to be a mean. It's not a mean talk. It's a real talk. And, you know, some people step it up, and it's like, oh, my gosh, you didn't even know they had it in them. Some people show you by their actions that they're not your person. They're never going to step it up. That's when we have to make a decision. It's time to get off the team.
I love the phrase you used, help me understand why, because I think it's a great first approach when something's not working out. Instead of jumping in and assuming that something's not getting done that person's incompetent or lazy or all the reasons we could come up with, approaching somebody with a sense of curiosity. What helped me understand what's going on. But all the accountability also depends on there being clear expectations from the beginning. And that's what we're going to get into, is how to set some of the KPIs around that. I want to mention one thing about that leadership void that we're talking about. The real danger in a leadership void is that the wrong person steps into that void. Because there's a lot of times, oh, you're going to have a leader, all right. It's just not going to be the one you want. And sometimes it just tends to be the most vocal person in the organization. And that could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. But there's a real danger there of somebody stepping in to fill that role if you're not doing it, if you're not hiring or developing the right person.
There is no doubt there will be a leader.
You have a leader, all right. Yes, you got yourself a leader.
and they're going to lead in the way they want to lead, not in the way you want to lead. It's self-serving if you don't name them. So you have to develop those leaders, or somebody's going to take your practice over, and you don't know if they're going to be taking it in the direction you want it to go. So you have to develop those people. And I was in a very unique situation in a practice that we were over $4 million. We were opening a new practice and probably do $1 million the first year. We needed somebody to help us build that. And we hired a leader. My Atlanta. It was a $80,000 salary, I'll just tell you, with a $20,000 bonus option. If she was able to bring down some of our cost of goods, it would be a switch. It would be a transition of money going to cost of goods, cost of staff, referring to her, coming to her. So she was amazing. And I would ask her, I'd say, oh, have you ever read this book? She said, oh, yeah, I've read that book. So finally I looked at her and I said, she's like 40. I said, how many books have you read? She said, I own about 500 leadership books. She said, that's what I do. She was incredible. In a week, the first week, she just watched our processes in clinical. And she said, here's two places. She went to my, she never worked in optometry. She went to my clinic administrator and she said, so let's walk through this together. She created two things that made it so much more efficient that three of the doctors that we had at the same time, they were able to see 2 to 3 more exams a day. But just watching, and she said, you know, efficiency is efficiency, whether you're in a dental clinic, surgical clinic, or an eye clinic. It was incredible. But a lot of practices don't have that kind of money to invest in a person. So if you don't, you're going to have to develop them. And the best way you can develop them is, and what I would like to work with iDoc is, and Nathan has these too, we have our pocketbooks. Our pocketbooks are books we keep in our pocket all the time. And when somebody says, what about this? We pull that book out of the pocket. Nathan had, we were sitting back there yesterday at 12 midnight. Me and him are going through our books. We love to spend time together. We don't get a lot of it together. But you know how, you know, sharp people sharpen other people. So we love to just kind of go back and forth. What's your books? Well, what I got over there, let me tell you what it is. Books changes who you are. And we need to give them the tools and have a list and say, if you're looking for leadership, here's some of the top books that our speakers recommend. If you're looking for processes, if you're looking about how to build your business, Traction, Geno Wickman, I can tell you off the top of my head, these are the books that help take you to the next level in different areas. I would love for us to have the iDoc library. And here's what our speakers that people ask for over and over, here's the books they recommend. And it's powerful. But we've got to develop them. We can't just hire somebody and put them in a position when they have no skill set. That's where the frustration comes. And you can't just let somebody else have control. Somebody's going to be the leader, and it's the strongest personality, and it's their way or the highway, and that's what you end up with. And then all of a sudden, you feel like you're held hostage. And I know there's going to be people listening to this podcast and go, that's me. We don't cater to terrorists. We got to get them out. And you may not, if you've let them have a lot of control, it's very hard to get those people back under control. You usually lose them. That's why it's very important to pick your leader, start developing them, and then you announce, this is my leader, and this is their position, and this is what their duties. Be very clear what they're going to be handling with the staff to the staff.
So I want to get into the KPIs, but I think a lot of people are wondering this question. When we decide that this is the person that I'm going to promote into that position, what do you look for? What qualities do you look for? Because it's very possible to promote someone right into incompetence. And I think we do that a lot, especially with seniority. We say, well, we've got a role for a manager. Hey, that person over there has been with the practice the longest. We're just going to promote him or her into a position where maybe they're not comfortable with, maybe they're not qualified for or suited for, but we can promote them right into incompetence. What are the qualities you look for that helps you make that decision?
So I'm going to just tell you, people say, Sharon Carter, do you ever have a failure? I just had an epic failure with the person I put into leadership. And this is what I saw in her. She was the hardest person, hardest working person I think I've ever worked with. She was there 30 minutes early every day, making sure everything was right, the book was right. I mean, she was on it. She would be willing to take on anything. If somebody said, I don't want to do that, she'd do it. I'll take it. Sometimes at her detriment, but I'll do it. And when I saw those attributes that she had, there was no way I could pick somebody over her that was not working as hard. But she had a struggle with, and I talked about this a lot in my class, emotional intelligence, to know here's how this person's perceiving me, whether that be a patient, whether that be a staff member, whether that be someone else on leadership. She, when she was coming across really bad, she couldn't tell that until later when people were treating her differently. And so as I put her in that position, we always do a trial. Trial is a 90-day, and we'll evaluate you at 30 days, 60 days, and 90 days with you being in this position. And I told her, the reason I picked you are these things, because clearly you're outworking everybody up there. I said, but here's my concerns, is that you struggle with your interpersonal relationships. You struggle being able to communicate with other people. You struggle with understanding how they're accepting the things that you're telling them to do and how you're interacting with them. And I said, that's what I'm working on. I gave her books. We did actually a one-hour leadership every month I came. We would sit down, all the leaders. She was the lead front desk person. We had a lead tech, a lead optician, my doctors, and then my administrator. We'd all sit down together, and we're going through a book. And I thought, hopefully, and I told her, I said, this is your tools to take you to the next level. And I would highly suggest, I listened to a masterclass thing with, it's called relational intelligence. It's one level above of how we see things through our own color glasses based on our relationships in our life. And I listened to that because of her. And I put a lot into her. I really wanted her to be successful because she has so much potential. And she has been fired from three positions, being a person that is the hardest working person I've ever worked with. And she couldn't own the behaviors. She couldn't say, I see that I handled that incorrectly. Help me understand what I did wrong. She couldn't see that. It's her fault. That's not me. I didn't do that. They're lying about me. No ownership whatsoever. And I told her, I said, this is a deal breaker. At the 30 days, we sat down and I said, I've given you some tools. I don't see a lot of progress. At 60 days, I said, there has been no progress. If I come back next month, we're going to have to pull you out of leadership if we can't get these things under control, because these are deal breakers. Before I got back the next month, we had two people on her team quit, and the other two were looking to quit. And it was all about the way she was handling herself, and she would come out and handle patients and would escalate them instead of de-escalate. And I told her, I said, you know, you've got to have skills to know. And we went through body language. When people are doing this, this means this is not going the way I want it to go. It's starting to escalate. So then we need to change our approach, bring our voice down, bring our tone down, bring our body language relaxed, to bring this down. And she could not own it. And I said, we're going to have to pull you out of leadership. I hope that you'll stay and do the jobs that you're doing, but we're not going to cut your pay. This is not about a pay thing. We're going to leave you where you are, which was basically almost a leadership. I mean, almost at the top with the leaders. And she did not take that well. And she ended up basically saying, I'm not going to do this with a good attitude. And I said, you know, I've invested a lot in you, and I had a lot of hopes for you, but it depended on you. And I tried to give you the tools, and I'm sorry that, you know, I hope I didn't set you up to fail, but I gave you the tools, but you just don't at this point have the ability to use those, or don't choose to use them. And I said, you're a good person, and you're a hard worker, and that's why I chose you. That's what I look for. Because if you pick somebody that's not the hardest worker, your team's not going to want to follow them. So you got to pick the person that's showing you by their actions, I'm the leader. They're handling things. They're working hard. They're showing up every day on time. They're being there for the team, even before they have the title. That's what I'm looking for.
Two things came through here that I hope people can hear as they're listening to this. I find two qualities pretty consistently in really good managers. It's a healthy mix of humility and assertiveness. And I just want to go back real quick to the thing you said before about initially approaching an employee like this and saying, help me understand why. It's more of approaching it with a sense of curiosity and acknowledging that maybe you don't have all the facts. Maybe there's a valid reason they're failing. That's humility. Like people with low levels of humility, it's hard for them to do that because they want to jump in. The other side of that is the assertiveness. And I think people just listening to you talk can hear the assertiveness coming through to be able to go to somebody and say, you're struggling in these areas. This is a deal, you use the word deal breaker. To give that candid feedback is really important. And I find if I'm looking for somebody in a leadership position, I just find that those two, a healthy balance of those two works really well. I saw this study and I've used it in a presentation before that the 50% of people in leadership positions actually rate themselves as terrible at holding people accountable. It's the number one most dodged responsibility in leaders. And I think it's that assertiveness component. It's hard for people to give someone else that direct feedback, but it's really important.
Because they feel like they're being mean. Maybe they don't know how to say it. It's not saying like, you're struggling. You got to get off the struggle bus or you're going to have to leave here. We wait until we're emotionally upset and angry, and then we deal with it. We don't want to deal with it before then because we don't like confrontation. So we wait to the point where we're already emotionally involved and we're on the angry side. So it's very easy for the emotions, the tone of voice, the body language to be more aggressive, more with more accusation, rather than, hey, help me understand. I'm here to help you. Help me understand so I can help you. It comes across like, if you don't do this, you're fixing to be out of here. So when I say it's a deal breaker, I don't say, this is a deal breaker, you fixing to have to go if you don't get this done. It's, these are deal breakers, and I want you to understand how important they are. Now, do I believe we can fix them? We got this. But I'm going to give you the tools, but I'm going to need you to take those and use them. You know, you can give somebody a lawnmower, but if they don't turn it on and use it, their grass looks horrible. And that's the thing, that the being able to sit down with them and say, so when I am mentoring my leaders, like my managers or my lead opticians, lead techs, I have them sit in with me and watch how we handle this. Because they've never seen it. Because maybe in their lifetime when people have a disagreement or we're not on the same page, we scream and yell at each other, we threaten, we leave, we all these different things, that's been their history. So how do we model that in front of them? How do we model? And some of my doctors, they don't like confrontation. They're not that assertive most of the time personality. They're more like, hopefully it's going to correct itself. No, it's going to change, but it's going to get worse, not better. So that's why it's so important to learn how to have these conversations before it's emotional, before it's a deal breaker where we don't have any place to go but out. But having those conversations, and people appreciate that, if you will do it in a way that's, I want to help you. I'm on your team. I want you to be successful. And that's what I said to her. I said, no one was more on board with you being successful than me. I wanted you to succeed. I picked you. I wanted you to succeed. But for whatever reason, and I have to step back and look at this too, maybe, and normally when you see people that can't be humble, it's a maturity issue. Maybe she wasn't at that point. And I said that to her. I said, maybe this isn't the time for you to be able to step up at that level. But here's what I want to say to you. I hope one day you'll face this again and again until you learn how to deal with it. And I said, I hope one day you'll hear my words that I believe in you. I believe that you can do this. This might not be the time for you to do it. And we don't have the time to give you to develop into it. We've got to have somebody that's going to step in as a leader. But I hope you'll remember hearing these words in your ears. I believe in you. You just have to step up and use the tools you're given. And you may have to get your own tools. But just knowing that people believe in you, I'm not out to hurt you. I'm not out to get you. I'm out to help you. And that might be having to let you go off my team. Mm-hmm.
This is, I think, one of the struggles with being a manager. And what makes it such a challenging job is there is so many emotions attached to that role. It's not as simple as you're dealing with other human beings. I'd like to transition into numbers and KPIs, because there's not as much emotion attached to that. but it also gives you a lot of clarity on what the expectations are when we set those. So how do you set that? How do you go about setting KPIs for each person in each area that's going to help take us to our yearly goal?
So I sit down with my leadership team, and we get the areas KPIs. And a lot of people, I did not know this, did not know what a KPI is. It's a key performance indicator. So here's what I say to them. What is the key performance thing I need these people to be focused on daily that's going to help us get to the 20% growth that we're looking for, money in the bank? What does this area need to do to make that happen? And then we break that down. Well, they need to make sure that we're staying on a timely, you know, mine is 12 to 15 minutes on our workup. Making sure we're staying, making sure we're getting accurate things in the chart. Making sure that we're getting, if my doctor wants to opt map on every patient, making sure we're educating them at a level to know what that is, what the benefit to them is of that. So then we break it down and say, okay, what KPIs are, maybe everybody's going to have the same KPI. Maybe we're going to say this person's going to have this KPI because they're more in the contact lens, staying on top of price increases, making sure the prices are where they need to be, making sure that we're getting all the discounts, making sure we're reconciling the invoices, because guess what? That's what helps us get to that bottom line money that we're looking for on our P&L. What's going to help? Your supply of contacts. So I do that by area and say, okay, what do you think is our key performance things we need to focus on to get us to this 20% growth? Then we go to optical. What do you think? Where are the areas that we are weak in? So let's give that. And one of my offices, we started out, that was my first one that we did KPIs. We gave them like five or six. What's the key thing? Well, there's six of them. So our success rate with that was not very good because some of them they did well with. And I said, you know, these people didn't even know what a KPI was. And now we have them tracking six of them. I said, I think that's too much. So as I'm doing this year, that was a big deal. Every office, I want to sit down, let's give everybody a KPI, that one thing that you need to focus on. And then this is what I said to them. You will be graded and given a raise based on how often you perform this KPI. So let's say we do crazy, we grow 35, 40%. There's big money out there for raises, and you only met your KPI 25% of the time, you're not raise eligible. If you did nothing to help us reach that, 25% of the time you barely showed up. So that is a measurement tool now to hold them accountable to the one thing I need you to do on a regular basis to help us reach our goal. And I was telling them in the last class, I said, it was so funny. I've got a girl that's not goal-oriented. She's a let's just get along, but she's a rule follower. So we gave her an amount of exams she needed to do, and it was two more a day than what they were previously doing. They're in a very small office. We're trying to find a bigger location. So a lot of things that keep you from not wanting to pick that pace up. We have an associate doctor that is not on board with that. She's happy where we are. So she puts pressure on not to put any more people on the books. But we're going to move to a new building that's double the size. We need to be doing all that we can do to be prepared financially to do that. So we gave her KPI, and it was having 18 full exams seen every day. So they would fluctuate up and down, but we're about 16. So she would tend to want to cave because the doctor would come to her, hey, don't put anybody else on the book. So I get to their office, and she goes, oh, girl, come in here. So everybody's name's up there, and hers has a gold star by it. She said, I have reached my KPIs every single day of last month. I met my KPI. And I said, well, everybody must have got on board. She goes, oh, no, they came up here putting pressure on me. I said, look here, my raise is dependent on my key thing that they're looking at. The way I perform and the way I get paid is how many people on that book, and it's 18, and it will be 18 every single day. Now her focus every day is that one thing. If we don't do anything else, we'll reach our 20% goal if she just keeps her one KPI. So then you think about it, if everybody in that clinic meets their KPI, we're going to be at probably 30% or more growth. Mm-hmm. That's how it happens. Here's my key thing to focus on. Not 22 things. Well, you got to do this, you got to do that, smile at the patient, do this. Those are givens. But But here's your key thing every day to focus on. And numbers are trackable. They're tangible. You can look at it. How am I doing? Am I being nice to every patient? I think so. No. Did I see 18? Yes or no. So find in each area what our sales need to be. If we need to collect this much, how much do we need to sell? So I back it down. And if we need to sell this much or collect this much and our per patient revenue is this, how many exams do we need to see? So we either need to pick up our exams or we need to pick up our per patient revenue. So I take it from the backside and come back. So our goal for next year is this. So if we stay at the same per patient revenue, that means we're going to have to see this many exams in a year, divide that by 12, divide that by 20-something days in a year. This is how many a day we need to be seeing if we don't increase our per patient revenue at all. That's what we need to see. So you start with the number we're looking to reach. Take the numbers we have already that we already have to look at, and then we back it down. If this is what our per patient revenue is, we just divide what we need to collect this year by that number, and that tells you how many exams you need to do. Then you divide that by how many days are we working a year. So that's how you can start at the end result and dial it back.
I like the one KPI approach because I think we can one thing to keep in mind as well is sometimes when we hit that one KPI, the other ones tend to fall into place. So instead
exactly.
of having six, I call it, and I'm stealing this term, the lead domino. What's the one thing you can do that's going to be the lead domino for a lot of other things? And
exactly.
You're giving people less to focus on. And when you can really lock in on that one thing, and to your point about numbers, and we've touched on the emotional side of leadership, but the numbers don't lie. And I just brought up this point. It got brought up in the last class that Nathan Hayes and I co-presented on regarding associate ODs. And you could have a scenario where, let's just say, I'm just going to make up round numbers here. An owner, I was using revenue per patient as the example. Let's say an owner's revenue per patient is $400 per patient.
Mm-hmm.
And an associate is saying, I'm doing all the things you're telling me to do. I don't know why, you know, and don't pick on me because, you know, then it gets emotional, but the numbers don't lie. If I'm $400 per patient and my associate is $250, the numbers don't lie. Something is happening different there that we got to try to figure out. But it kind of it removes emotion from it.
So I have the very same thing, but it's the opposite. So my doctor that's an associate, his per patient revenue is $500. The least it's been is $503 per patient mm-hmm. in a place where it's 65% Medicaid. And it's $503. That was the lowest. It'd been as high as $590 per patient, money in the bank. And my older doctor came to him and said, hold on, I'm at like 380. And he started digging. He said, why are you at such a higher? And he goes, these are the things that I do. And we dissected it. What are you doing? And we pulled our report. This is what you're billing out. This is what you're billing out. Where's the differences? And how is that creating revenue for you? And it's unbelievable when you see that. And look at it. And we just had a young doctor, and we put everything in place, a perfect storm for him to walk in. All he had to do was see patients. That was it. I call it plug and play. I said we had everything ready. That guy stepped out. He's amazing. Now he really is. 12 months into the world of optometry, right out of school, he collected $1,029,000. So, of course, on a 15% bonus rate, he had a very nice salary. And I asked him when he came, the first thing I asked him, I said, what's your goal? He said, I want to collect $1 million my first 12 months. I said, he said, can we? I said, no, we will. And when we ran it, he goes, the pressure was like, oh, my gosh. We ran it. I said, $1,029,000, party time. Isn't that amazing? First year out of school, that's what he's generating. And again, numbers don't lie. And then dissecting how quarterly we'd set down. Are we on track? What's getting us there? What are the things that we're doing that's getting us there? What are we doing what are we not doing that could help us get there at a bigger level? Always, and I love this book called The 12-Week Year. It's basically reassessing every quarter. And if we're not making our goal to reach the goal at the end of the year, this is where the accountability comes in. Used to we go, oh, we're behind. Hopefully we make it up. Now we look at it and go, okay, the three things we focused on is not helping us get to where we need to get. What do we need to refocus on for the next 12 weeks that's going to help us get there? Or if, oh my gosh, we're crushing it. Okay, let's keep those three things because we're ahead of the game right here. But assessing it and making adjustments to our plan every quarter, a 12-week year, so that you don't get to the end of the year and it's like, oh snap, we didn't make our goal. You'll readjust to where you give yourself every opportunity to meet that goal because you're readjusting things at every quarter. Okay, we're doing great now. Let's keep it the same. Or, oh, this ain't serving us well. Let's make some changes. What's the top three things? As a leadership, what do we need to focus on? Kind of like the KPIs. But and we're going to assess the KPIs because a lot of my offices have never had them. We're going to reassess those at the quarter mark and say, okay, are most people attaining them? And we're going to sit down with our groups and say, okay, are we meeting our KPIs? Why not? What's keeping us? What do we need to do? What do we need to give you to help you reach those KPIs? And we want to be interactive with them. We don't want them to think you're here, we dumped this in your lap, good luck. We want to help them reach it. And I'm telling you, just seeing the level they're already reaching it, and it's doable. I think when you sell, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this, all of a sudden it's like it's like the screen with the credits rolling on it. You can't even wrap your mind around it. But when it's that one thing, and I love it when I can call them and say, this is an air high five from across the way. You are crushing it. You're doing amazing. They feel that accomplishment, and they step up. And like you said, the other things fall into play.
I love that book, The 12-Week Year. And it if you haven't read it before, it hits on a few things. One is the 12-week concept. They actually shrunk the goal from your typical – I mean, it's fine to have an annual goal, but the 12-week creates a sense of urgency, which I think is real important.
Yeah, you break
shrink
it in.
Yeah,
yes.
You shrink the time frame because some of the thinking and some of the research around an annual goal – again, without being broken to chunks, is annual goal, what they found is people either tend to come out of the gate really strong and then kind of peter out because they know they have a year, or you procrastinate. And because
and
you
then
know,
you try to rush at the
yeah,
end
you rush
to catch
it,
up.
Yeah, you
yeah.
start in October, right?
Yeah.
So the 12-week year shrinks that down. But the 12-week year really validated something for me that I've always felt and I've always believed, but it put it into words, and it was the focus on actions over outcomes. You know, the outcome, we talked about a KPI, an outcome is actually just a lagging indicator to tell you whether or not what you're doing is working or not. So
that's
the
right.
difference would be, the focus on the action would be seeing 18 patients a day. That's the action. We're actually doing something. What are we doing that's driving us toward our goal versus just having a goal to grow 10% this year?
Right.
That's what I see all too often. Well, we have a goal to grow 10%. And when I ask an owner, what do you expect people to do? What actions do you want them to take? That really hasn't been clarified. So that's a big part of that book. And accountability is a
yes.
big part of that book as well. But really, it really is a great, if you're looking for a framework for how to set goals, I think you'll find a lot of great ideas from that.
You know, I cut my teeth on Zig Ziglar, and I knew him. We would go see him and his wife, the redhead. They knew Carter and I. And my husband really understood that if you're going to own a business and you're going to be a leader, you have to invest in yourself. And I feel like my docs sometimes don't invest in their leadership skills. At the end of the day, you're my top leader. And I said this to them in the last class, you have to have the vision. When you have a vision, people can buy into that with you. There's a reason why they want to do their KPIs. There's a reason why they want to be in the boat with you. But when you have no vision and you're just rolling along, when things get hard, it's easy to check out because there's nothing invested. There's no emotion. I was mentioning one of my doctors that I just started working with, and one of his girls in my class, I said, what's your vision? And the first time I came there, she said, you see that field out there? There's going to be a dry eye clinic out there, and I'm going to be in it. And I spoke about this in that class, and she was in it, and she teared up. She said, Miss Sharon, you're making me cry, because she's passionate about it. She is all in. What if you had 10 people in your practice? I'm telling you, I said, y'all come back. I said, do y'all think that she's going to have that dry clinic in 2 to 3 years? Everybody's like, yeah, we're coming back. everybody's in her corner because you know what? It means so much to her that she's emotional. That's her dream. That's her goal. And when you can have people like her committed, then do you think your practice is going to meet its goals? There's no way it can miss because people are all in with you because it's personal to them. And that's the thing, getting people plugged in at a level that it's not just your goal anymore, it's their goal. And it's who they are. And that ownership level is next level.
How do you communicate goals and expectations to people? Because one of the best definitions I ever heard for accountability is getting people to perform in a way in which they know in advance they're going to have to account for their performance at a later date, which just means knowing up front that once we've gotten clear on what these KPIs, what the expectations are, mm-hmm. that we're going to sit down at a future point. And then to pull a term from the corporate world, you have to report to somebody.
Yes.
And I think that naturally builds in a mechanism of accountability. Too often, these conversations take place, but there's no follow-up. So you say 18 patients a day, and then maybe that happens for 2.5 weeks, and then we start to slip a little bit. But if there's not accountability in there, there's not that follow-up with it. So what is your approach to communicating around the goals and expectations to make sure that not only are people clear on what these are, but also that they stick, that they don't just fade away after people start, they go back to their old ways?
The way they stick is when people do it long enough to make it a habit, then it's autopilot. So then it's harder to go back than it is to continue to do what you're doing. But the way you do that is number one, we wrote it down for them. It was given to them, written out. And because people, when you say it, it might have one level of meaning, but when you write it down, now it's in stone. They can't say, well, you didn't say that. And it's much more formal. When you say, hey, I want you to do 18 exams a day and move on, is that really something that they go, okay, their expectation is that I do 18 a day, and otherwise I'm going to be accountable for that. Here's how I made them really accountable. This is how you're going to be graded on your job performance. Raise eligibility and raise amount is going to depend on this. That's the accountability. And because people think they sit their butt in a chair for another year and that means I get a raise. And they'll say that to me, well, I've been here another year. I know that might be my bad. I might have should have hit eject and got somebody in here that produced a little more than you. But I always tell people, if you're going to walk into your review, walk in with a piece of paper of what you've done to affect this practice in a positive way. Did you save them money? Did you make them money? And I want you to tell them, this is what I've done in the last year in my performance to bring value to this practice. And that value was, I raised it $50,000 by my sales this year. I had a guy, I always say that, I had a guy walk in, and we have like 5 opticians. He walked in, and he said, Ms. Sharon, I got my paper. I said, man, Nick, I'm ecstatic. He sat down and he said, I have missed one day other than in a year, other than my scheduled vacation. One day. I have been the top producer. And he said, that has been over $70,000 every single month in sales in the optical. And I've been the top producer every single month for 12 straight months. That means I have brought in this much money in charges and this much money in collections in the optical. And I feel like I should be raise eligible. I said, high five, boo. Me too. How do you not raise somebody like that? He brought his performance to the board, and there is no denying he got the highest raise of anybody there. Mm-hmm. But he brought his numbers, and you don't argue with numbers. And you don't let those kind of numbers walk away from you. You don't let your highest producer for 12 straight months that's missed one day besides his paid vacation. You know, he said, one day I had to call in sick. Everything else was a planned vacation, and you knew I was leaving well in advance. Everything that made him an amazing optician, he said, this is where my performance level is on that level. And guess what? He got raised. He's now going to optometry school. We work around his schedule. We try, because you know what? He's an amazing employee. And he said, thank you for helping me understand the value that I bring and how I can bring more value and how that value can be rewarded. When he came to us, he'd worked 3 months at another office, and it was nothing like ours. It was like, oh, we have one, almost like a retail store, just cash and carry, hurry up, get it made, make it fast as you can, cheap as you can. And so his sales were really, very low. And so the doctor's wife is the administrator, and she said, brought him in, and she goes, Sharon Carter's coming in a week, and I'm going to tell you, if you don't do something different, you ain't going to be here. So this was his 30 day. She said, your sales are really low and you've really not picked up on things like we should. And so you may not be here when she comes. That kid did a 180. And again, for 12 straight months, he was the top seller. And he said, I knew she was serious and I love this place. I wanted to be here. So that culture that you're creating, performing people want to be with performing people. So when you have people like him, people want to work with them. And they're like, hey, game on. I want to be you. So our new opticians are like, I want to be Nick. And, you know, the camaraderie, it's amazing because high-producing people want to be around high-producing people. They want to associate with like people. And they'll have fun challenges with each other. So
I like concrete numbers because there's less room for misinterpretation, right? If you put 10 people in a room and you tell them to
do a good job,
you're going to have 10 people all thinking something different. What is that? Or work harder. It's not clear on what that is. And you're going to have a room full of people all thinking something different because it's not clear. That's what I like about concrete numbers. However, how do you handle situations where the goal might not be concrete? Things like patient satisfaction, improving efficiency, customer service. It's harder to attach a number to that. Do you have a process for quantifying those things?
So we read all of our reviews in our office meetings every week. And if someone's name is called, we automatically recognize that because we always say, this, you've done something that was so memorable. There's 25 people in this office, and you did something so memorable to them that they were willing to take their time to write about it. So just acknowledging, and I always tell them, that's our practice scoreboard, is our reviews. Looking at the reviews, asking patients, how are we doing? Sometimes I'll call patients and say, we were doing some different procedures in the office, and how's the patient really feeling about it when they leave? So I would call some of them, hey, we just wanted to call and check on you, and I'm their consultant. I wanted to see what your experience was. You know, our goal is to just exceed our patients' expectations and give the best service possible, and we want to make sure we're doing that, and the only way we can do that is to reach out to you. So I've got a couple of questions. Do you have time to answer those? People were ecstatic. They were like, thank you for calling. I said, we just want to make sure we're on the right track and we're offering things that people can come on board with, and the experience that you're having is at the level we want them to be. But sharing that with your team. Anytime someone has a bad review, we have to have a discussion, period. And it may not be their fault. It may be one of those patients that, I don't care what you do, it's going to be a bad experience. But we have to dissect that every time because that's not what we're looking for. That's not the result we're looking for. So we need to dissect that to see what happened. Was there anything we could change? So just making them aware of the expectation, here's what exceeding their patient's expectation looks like for us. They don't sit in that reception area more than 5 minutes. We're moving them back. They're not sitting here 30 minutes without moving. What that looks like as a tech, that you're kind to them, that you're explain things to them, that you give that experience that we're not rushing you through here like you're a bunch of cattle. What that looks like is explaining and educating to them so that they choose the things that with premium products like the OptiMap that's going to give us good data, that's going to help them understand their eye health and what's going on. When it gets to optical, giving them the things that's going to give them the best vision, not pushy sales, making them feel like we've got plenty of time for you, and we're asking them, what do you do with your eyes when you work? Oh my gosh, I've got a pair of some lenses that address that. What do you do with your eyes when you're not at work? And letting them know, we're not just here to sell you something. We're here to find out what do you need and to meet those needs. That's what I feel like setting those expectations is the culture of your practice. When you hire somebody in that area, that's our job to say, this is the level at which we expect our patients to be interacted with and helped. This is that level. And then when we don't reach it, then we need to sit down and have a conversation. Sometimes it's a conversation as, hey, optical team, we dropped the ball here. Or it may be with a person, you dropped the ball on this patient. Help me understand what we could have done better. What made this happen? Was it that we dropped them off and you were getting ready to leave for the day? We dropped them off and there was no optician to take them and hear what the doctor said. what led up to this issue that this patient did not get the experience we want them to have? And then how do we walk that back to what could we do in the future? And it may not be the person that received them in the optical that created the issue. It may be on the backside. Well, they've already been here 45 minutes, and so they don't have time to shop. You know, they don't have time to look for glasses, and now they're upset because they want a new pair of glasses. So digging down to those things of here's what we expect in each area to exceed our patients' expectations. These things happen on a consistent basis. They're never left in a room over, you know, every 5 minutes somebody needs to stick their head in there. The doc's right on his way. If they've sat there for 5 to 10 minutes, have your guidelines for that. Then we need to make sure we're popping in there. He'll be right with you. We had emergency come in. Just that level of communication. But even though you can't put a number to it, you can put, this is what I want to happen. This is the experience I want them to have. And making sure everybody understands that level of experience.
We'll close out here, and I think I'd like to remind people that it's real easy to get caught up, and I think sometimes we focus on things like setting expectations, and these are really important. It's what we focus on, setting clear expectations and focusing on the things we need to do to drive our practice to the next level and accomplish our goals. But we're not always going to reach our goals, and that's okay, because sometimes that's where the real magic happens.
Yes.
Is dissecting what went wrong, is learning from it, and
that's right.
Learning and improving from our mistakes. So don't hesitate to jump in and start setting KPIs and goals and start implementing some of the things we're talking about because you feel like it needs to be perfect, and don't give up just because you didn't reach a goal. It's the magic a lot of times happens when you fall short of your goals and you go back with your team and say, why? You know, what could we have done better? And you learn from it. And that, I think, is what they call continuous improvement, right? Where you're just continuously improving, that's going to take you to that next level. We should probably clarify that next level, it's not like a step where you're just going to step up.
Right.
It's slow and it's gradual.
Right.
And
it's a staircase.
It's up and down.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? You may start climbing the staircase, and guess what? You have to take a step back.
Yeah.
But I loved how Zig said it. He said, we fail our way to success. Failures is when you get emotional. That's when you dig in. When you're having success, you're just riding the wave. But when you are failing, you go back and go, oh my gosh, I don't want that to happen again. You know, we got to dig into this. And like you said, that's where the magic happens, because that's when you dig down and find out, okay, these things are not serving us well. This person isn't serving us well sometimes. Here's what we're going to have to do to make a change. And then, you know, I was listening to Brother David Jeremiah this morning, and he said, you know, we need more of in this culture we have is persistence. And he said, you know what persistence is? We just don't quit. And you're going to succeed if you don't quit, because you'll figure it out. You'll fail your way to success. And, you know, we look at athletes and we think, oh, my gosh, they just walked out of here hitting all these home runs. And, you know, when you hear them look at their history, it's like, oh, my gosh, I have literally struck out hundreds of more times than I hit home runs. But you know what? Striking out made me figure out how to hit the home runs. And that's what I want to say. This is not a sprint. This is a marathon. And just because we don't succeed at everything we set doesn't mean we discard it, doesn't mean we quit. It means we analyze it and say, okay, this is what I want to happen. How do I need to tweak this to make it happen correctly for us? It's not that it doesn't work. It's that we may need to tweak this to work for us, because we got it out there. Private equity sees, oh, my gosh, there's money on the table everywhere. That's the good news. The bad news is that we're not getting it, but we can get it. And just not being scared to step outside the box. You know, I'm so outside the box, I don't even know there is a box. But that's what's brought me the success in what I do, because I do see things out of the box, and I challenge people to step out. And when I find people that are already out of the box, man, I cling on. There's my people. That's what I would challenge you. Find your space to start with. Where's the first step? And start stepping. Don't be scared. Be bold. And don't be scared if you fail. You know what? We've all failed. Epic failure sometimes. Just analyze and then get yourself back in the game.
Well, thank you, Sharon. I told you 20 minutes wasn't going to be enough. No. So for context, because there was a mix-up and they wanted to limit this podcast to 20 minutes, and I said Sharon Carter's got way more on her mind than 20 minutes is gonna allow. So as always, a wealth of insight and knowledge, and we appreciate so much that sharing that with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And you guys, we're all in this game together. I'm so excited to be in it with some incredible people. Thank you, Steve.
Sharon, where can people find out more about you and your company?
You can go to my website. It's ecoc.biz, like Eddie Charlie, Octopus Charlie, .biz, B-I-Z. And there you can reach me through my email, all the information. Just get ready when the page pops up. There's crazy, so you know what you're getting. But I definitely would like for you to go in and interact with me there. If you sign up for my newsletter, sometimes I'm not very consistent. My girl just got on to me. I want to do one every quarter of what I'm seeing, the things I'm seeing, and what needs to be on our minds for the next quarter. And so I'm going to try to be getting one out here in March. This is what we need to be focused on. This is what my group has focused on and giving you some good information. So go to the website, sign up for my newsletter, send me an email if you'd like. And thank you so much for allowing me to participate in this amazing event.
Well, thanks for being part of it, Sharon. And enjoy the rest of your time here at The Connection. So great seeing you. If you'd like more information about iDoc and how we work with ODs to help them grow their practice, you can find out more at iDoc.net. So thanks to Sharon, and thanks everyone.